V is massless and shows amplitudes. They are not very finite objects by themselves. But the advantage of the correlation functions is, since they are finite, they should preserve all the symmetries of the initial theory. So it's some nice object to study, and hopefully it's related to something what is the main subject of the school. So I'm going to speak about some elements of integrability. In application to correlation functions. So before starting some advanced stuff, let me just tell, so what is n equals 4 and what is ADS-CFT correspondence? So there are, of course, many specials, but also some very young people. So n equals 4 is like a QCD, just with some strange fields. And so first it contains 6 scalar fields, some fermions, and also, of course, the vector field. And all these fields are the SUN n by n matrices. And then the ADS-CFT correspondence tells that studying this theory with these fields in 4 dimensions is the same as to studying a string, a 2-dimensional object, essentially, which lives in S5 cross ADS-5. Oh. And you can think roughly that this vector field, they parameterize ADS space, a non-compact part, and the 6 scalars, they parameterize somehow S5. And then the action of the string is a usual action up to some fermions. But for our goal, it's enough just to know that it's an action. Okay, well, this is a metric of this curved space. So this is how the theory is defined. So this, and the statement is that this 2-dimensional theory is dual to this 4-dimensional gauge theory in the sense that observables here can be also computed in this theory. And one of the basic observables is the correlation functions of some local operators. So it could be some 2-point function or 3-point function. And so on. So you see there is still lots of things to do because even if 2-point function to some extent is studied, still there is work for some future generations. That's why we're recording all these talks. Okay, so these are the observables, and there are also, of course, parameters, which is important to compare. So, of course, in the gauge theory, there is a gauge coupling and number of colors, and we can build a Toft coupling, which is some combination of this. And actually, so we will use not N, but NC, because N is already occupied in Mathematica. Okay. So unfortunately, we can't use N anymore. Okay. Okay. So now I said you that these are observables and this should be some gauge invariant local operators. And mainly I want to consider some very particular ones, some x and this, and their permutations, where x's and this, there are some combinations of this scalar field, so this is a complex combinations. Okay. So now, if we take some simple two-point function, and we want to compute it, say, at tree level, then we just have to join all these fields by propagators. And so it's useful to know what are these propagators. And the propagators are the forms, the non-zero ones are between x and x bar, or z and z bar, but not the other way around. So this one is, roughly speaking, 1 over x minus y squared. Okay, so in order to have non-zero correlation function at tree level, we see that we have to conjugate one of the operators. Okay, but actually, if you you can see easily that at tree level, nothing particularly complicated can arise in this calculation, because it's very straightforward to compute. And where the real life is actually at one loop. And what we find already at one loop or at higher loops is that if we take some arbitrary operators of this type, what we find is some mess. So I hope I don't misspell this word. And the reason is that actually these operators, which look nice from the point of view of Lagrangians, they are not very nice from the point of view of quantum theory. And the nice basis actually can be, so there is a chosen basis. Let me again use the same letter, or A of X is such that instead of this mass, you get just a simple power on the right-hand side. Delta. And then the only interesting object that for two-point function is this function delta of lambda. Sorry? Yeah, and so basis, it should be orthonormal in some sense. So let me put delta AB here. And let me give some example of this operators which are nice from the point of view of this definition. So, and there are two operators which I know more or less. So, just trace. So, this is so-called Kanishi operator, and also a similar one. Okay, so what you see is that the nice operators, they're actually some non-trivial linear combinations of these single trace operators, and so there are actually two questions one can ask. First question, what is this function delta of lambda? And the second one, is what a this coefficient. Okay, and somehow the first question turns out to be relatively simple compared to the second one, and second doesn't have probably the unique answer due to some filter definitions. And in particular for these two operators, it is actually very easy to compute delta of lambda to the leading order. So let's do this at tree level, since we have to join all these fields with some other fields, we get finally four propagators. Right? Each propagator gives us power 2, so the final power will be 8, and so delta to the leading order is just 4 in both cases. However, already at one loop, what we observe is that there are no corrections, whereas here, oh my God, it is something complicated, and then it is known that this series continues to infinity, whereas this one is just exactly 4. Okay, so there are some particularly simple combinations which are called BPS, and I think so this operator, they will appear in the exercise for tomorrow. And whereas this delta of lambda for Kanishi operator is a very complicated series expansion, and in order to compute it, you have to solve some system of integral equations, and you get some plot. What? Yeah, I don't know why did they wrote 16. But actually, so this is a part of exercise to check this coefficient. So how can you check it? You can ask me, because at the moment it's not clear. And so I don't want to go into details. In principle, this is an equation to people who can do perturbation theory calculations, and there are quite a few here. But let me just give you an answer. So at one loop, the answer to the first question is the following. You just have to solve a system of polynomial equations. So it sounds quite simple. K minus U J plus I. K minus U J plus I. M. So what is L and M? L is a number of Z fields, and M is a number, so Z fields plus number of X fields, so the length, and M is a number of X fields. So you solve this system of equations, and then delta is equal to L plus, that's why I wrote 4 pi squared. Uj squared plus 1/4, hopefully. Is it correct? Okay. Now, so this is one of the exercises to study the system of equations numerically. And the answer to the second question is seemingly more involved. And so we want to answer the question, what kind of coefficients could appear in these permutations. And for example, for two impurities of X, all of you know. So I have a C of Z fields and then some X's, some points. then, so I just have to know a function of two integers, psi and 1 and 2. So this is a function which contains all these coefficients, plus minus 1 or 1 plus 2. However, for a general solution of Beta-Ansatz equation, so I don't know whether I mentioned it. Double dot somewhere. No?
Yes?
Okay. Huh? No? Okay. This is a tricky business, and it was not a good idea. Okay, and now, in terms of this beta roots, the center is this real complex numbers which appear in the Beta-Ansatz solution. It's psi is equal to one and two plus the same and 1 and 2 interchanged, and times, hopefully. So, okay. Up to conjugation. okay, so this will be one of the exercises to solve this Beta-Ansatz equation and then compute the energy. So, but you can say me that it is mega boring, so who cares about some one loop stuff? And let me tell you that in fact this one loop result, it matches precisely to some quantity which you compute in string theory. Okay, so it makes it exponentially more funnier to compute, because the second part, and actually the parts are interchanged in the exercise. The second part, I will explain you what should you compute in string theory in order to match this result which you obtain from the Beta-Ansatz. How much time do you have? More than half. How much more? Okay. How could it be possible in principle? That's your question. Yeah. And it will be answered soon. Okay, first let's just understand what is the analog of this delta in string theory. And actually, so since there are not too many things one can do with this string in a curved space, basically what you can solve classical equations of motion. Yeah? And so what are the nice parameters of classical solutions? This charges of classical solution and energy of classical solution, right? So charges, they naturally can be associated with these integers, right? Because like angular momentum is quantized. So, I mean, here you have integers and they're integers. Of course, you can do a more sophisticated argument to prove this. But this L and M, this turns out to be just global charges of the classical solution, whereas delta is nothing but the energy of this given classical solution. So let me now go into details. So since we consider only X and Z, this corresponds actually to just some subspace of ADS5 cross S5. So you can always embed R into ADS5 and some S3 into S5. And then instead of this action, I can actually write it more explicitly. So the same integrals over sigma, then dA x, AX, where x is now a four-dimensional vector, and plus a constraint which tells that x square is 1, so that indeed this x square is equal to 1 is equivalent to S3. Okay, so this is the action, and this is Lagrange multiplier. Now I know for sure that it's not Legendre this time. Then one of the things to do, so unfortunately, Mathematica is not super efficient here, but you, of course, can use it still. But hopefully, you still can do something by hands after just 1 day of exercises. So equations of motion are the following. Okay, so it's like quite nonlinear equations, but in some cases they're solvable exactly, and the exercise is exactly about one particular ansatz which goes through this equation, and then you just have to fix some parameters of the solution and evaluate energy. And energy is given by the formula. So this you can also think how to derive, where does it come from. So it looks like I took a square root by mistake and forgot to integrate in sigma, but don't worry, that's the right answer. Pedro proofs. Now about the charges. The symmetry is SO4. So SO4 is the same as SU2 cross SU2. And then for each SU2, I mean, you all know the representation theory of SU2, there are angular momenta, and they're related to this parameter cell and them by this. So one is a momentum in one is to two and another in another. Okay. Now, so this energy, I said, actually, it's not an energy. It's precisely our delta, which we I just explained to you how to compute it. A weak coupling up to one loop. And as you see, so this square root of lambda, this coefficient here plays a role of 1 over h bar. And so in order to, for the classical theory to be applicable, this coefficient should be asymptotically large. Right? So actually, the lambda is very large, whereas here we just expand a small lambda. Right? So lambda presumably is small. So how come? And the trick is the following, that our delta is a function of L, M, and lambda. Okay. Let us expand in the limit when L is of order of M, and they are much bigger than square root of lambda. Then you see that, classical energy starts from square root of lambda. So let me try to guess what kind of expansion I will get. This you will check explicitly for the example, for the exercise. And expansion is the following. So it indeed starts from square root of lambda, and the leading term in the expansion of L or square root of lambda so is the first power. Then, so let me actually call this L over square root of lambda by curly J. So I'm expanding for at large. It's not good. Not good. 1 to 3. So I'm expanding at large curly J. and the type of expansion I get is the following. So A and B. And so on. Okay, now if I write it, if I reconstruct what is actually L, so I introduce this curly J just in order to cheat you. Okay, because now it's very simple. So if I reconstruct now L, I get the following. So this is L over square root of lambda. So it gives lambda A over L. And then the next term, it gives lambda square B over L square, and so on. So you see, even though that initial expression, it was expansion in square root of lambda for large lambda, if we re-expand it for a much bigger than square root of lambda, actually, this looks pretty much like a perturbative expansion and weak coupling, you see? And so the problem will be to show, indeed, that this coefficient, which you now can compute explicitly, some particular solution, it matches perfectly 1 over 8 expansion. So also, you have to send edge to infinity of this sum. What? Yes, you're right. Okay, so any questions? Yes? Of adding them. So they're just global charges with respect to global isometry, global symmetry of S3. Right, you have classical solution, and you have symmetry, so there are some charges this solution has. So this adding them, this is some combination of left and right charges with respect to these two base U2s. Huh? M? M, so since I keep M and L of the same order, these coefficients, they are non-trivial functions of M over A. And actually, you are not comparing just one single coefficient, but you are comparing the whole function of M over L, which could be arbitrarily non-trivial. And for the case you will consider, it will be a non-trivial function of alpha. So we can check that actually numbers matches for different alphas.
So
so at low, I mean, there is the well-defined prescription what you should do in order to reproduce weak coupling from strong coupling. Right? So in some sense, this coefficient is universal. It's no matter where you compute it, at weak or strong coupling. It's like, yeah, then you can continue this game up to 3 or 4 loops. Then at some point you get some problems because actually you're changing order of expansion, so it's expected that at some point you may be in trouble. Yes? Yes. As you can see, L is large. So. Yes. In gauge theory, you also have to, because this sum is a non-trivial function of both M and L, and what you want to get is some function of ratio M over L. So you have to send both of them simultaneously to infinity in this coefficient. Yes? Yeah, but for the particular example, which is the problems, it holds. And for actually for infinitely many solutions. So. With what? Gluing? Given charges. You obtain a solution. Is a function of some parameters, and then you resolve these parameters by fitting these charges. Okay. Yeah, but you should really do exercise, and you'll see explicit solution of this equation. And there you can compute charges and check that indeed what is called L is indeed the charge with respect to global symmetry. Yeah, I think it's possible just... Yes. No, yes. Yeah, it is possible. Yeah. Okay, so now let me hope I still have some charge. There are no more questions. How much? 25? Sorry. Yes?
In this video, it's quite clear where the large L and large M expansion comes about. Can you say how it comes about in the issue of whether you use the vector M or large?
How or why?
Where? How? Yeah, how?
So let me just go through the exercise. I hope most of questions will disappear. So just repeat here some main formulas for self-consistency, and then it is proposed to use the following ansatz for the solution. And then when you substitute this ansatz into the equations of motion, you get some relations on these parameters, various parameters which you see here. And in particular, finally, you compute energy as a function of these parameters. And then at weak coupling, you have to solve this equation numerically, the Bittansatz equation with some particular starting points. And then, so this solution, this is a complex plane, and the beta roots, you see, they're distributed along this nice cut. Then you can think, actually, how to obtain some more solutions with, like, two cuts or three cuts and so on, and how to modify the initial points. And then the energy, like I compute for L equal 200 something and M equal 30, and actually that's already enough to get some several digits match. But then you can improve it, and actually you can get match of 20 digits by making extrapolation to infinity. So that's all very important elements and very easy to do in mathematics. Okay. Now about the exercises. Are there some more questions? Yes? With what? With... okay, I will show you probably. Ah, by the way, that's wrong. Okay, let me first start from basic exercises and... also more advanced. So this is some variant of the exercise which you saw yesterday. Okay, hope you don't think it's a completely different problem. And the problem was actually to write a flattened function. Okay, and what most people first obtained was this rule. Okay. Oops. Okay. And then if you do it several times, you almost get the perfect result up to some problems with some letters, which I use somewhere. So you get almost perfectly the result, but instead of list, you see the header is sequence. So in principle, you can just list inside, but this is unfortunately not allowed by the exercise. So, and since all of you almost saw the sequence stuff, let me tell you actually that why it could be quite useful. So it's not just some garbage from inside of Mathematica which appears by mistake, but actually it's quite useful. So if you have some integral of this type, for example, where n is arbitrary, so how do we do? So say if n is, if n is rather small, so you can type this by hand, right? Or by head, as some people tell. Okay, or if we have two variables, you can do like this. Yeah, but now the question is what to do if you have like 20. Let me introduce this n is equal to 5 instead of 20 because the mathematics is mega slow, actually. And so I want to integrate. So I can prepare a table. Xi from. Yeah, this is just a function to avoid lots of complaints from Mathematica. Okay, table, and send I from 1 to n. Okay, so what it gives, so let me try this integrate, and you'll see that she is not happy. And the problem is that instead of this form, I have here some extra brackets. So like if I change the form, you see here there is extra bracket outside, and I don't like it. And actually it's precisely what we get here. And so I have to get rid of this bracket outside. What I do, I just change header of list to sequence. So sequence is like empty header, okay? So if I change, I get perfectly what I need, and now I can even use integrate, and it even gives the result. So this kind of integrals you saw during the first lecture, at least I saw when I came last 5 minutes. Okay, now let's go back to our exercise. And so what's the problem here? The problem is that we should tell Mathematica to stop as soon as there are no internal lists in the expression, right? And the simple thing to do is just to tell that there is something inside. And then it works perfectly. Any questions? Sorry? No, list are allowed. But in the right-hand side, not in the left. I mean, it could be in the right-hand side of substitute. Okay, now another exercise was actually just to know how to search. And you was given a hint that it is RS something. And then there are two ways to solve this problem. So one is to use control K. I don't know what's in Mac, don't ask me. So, but if you use control K, it's immediately complete the function if there is a single answer. And if there are several, it gives like several possibilities. So in this case, it's immediate, and then you just have to search in help and see what happens. And another possibility is to use a question mark in combination with a star, which also immediately tells you what you should do. So what you should do, let me just show you. Okay, what is the result? Result is here. So that's how it should be done. So you just read this help and you're done. Okay. Well, now exercise 3 was about symmetrizer. Okay. How much? Cool. So say if we have some function g of 1 to 3, and we want to make symmetrizer. So first thing to do is permutation of 1 to 3. So actually, and we see immediately that we have to put brackets. It gives the list of all permutations. So that's already something which is useful. And then, as you all now know very well, there is this nice three at symbol, which replaces headers at level one. Okay? So what the G3A does, as it was explained, that it replaces headers at the level one. So level one, it means that you go inside expression, inside the arguments of the first function, and what you see is list with some arguments. And you want to replace this list by G, and that's what precisely what you need. Now there is a small problem that it is list of stuff, so you just have to replace list by plus. Okay, and now we are almost done. We just have to replace by length of 1 to 3. Factorial problem. Okay, now we just combine it to one single function. It is not this one. It is not this one. It is this one. And I forgot factorial here. So now let me try. So, and oops. Yeah, factorial was not needed, apparently, so. Yeah, because I can put length of permutation. So it's not very smart, because everyone knows the length of permutation. But actually, it could be more involved, because it may be that you have the same arguments. And then, so G... And then you don't want actually to divide by 4 factorial. You want to divide by 3 factorial, right? Hopefully. Okay. No, not 3, okay. It's some more involved number. Because, I mean, if you have some arguments equal, then the number of permutations is smaller. Right? And now, I mean, you also can think about anti-symmetrizer. And for that, you just have to replace G by the signature of its argument. So signature is precisely returns you the sign of permutation. But here you have to be careful because you have to take into account the initial signature, the signature of initial argument, because you want G with initial arguments to come with plus sign, right? Some small thing. Okay, now something more complicated. And lots of people lost like 3 hours and probably a sleepless night. So the problem was to use this identity to show this relation. So, how do I do it? So let me, so the strategy will be the following. I want to get, I want to minimize the argument u. Okay, so I will decrease u until it is positive. And this is proven to work. So, for that, we have to extract. Yeah, of course, we can do this by hands, but we are not in the position to do it by hands on the Mathematica summer school. Okay, so we get this result, and you see in the right-hand side, I achieved the following, that the right-hand side contains u shifted by negative integers, right? So if I apply this rule, it will always decrease the u for me. And now, so I want to use this rule, okay? It looks nice. The problem is how to copy. And I can call it by some name, but another way to do this is to copy-paste it. And if you copy-paste expression like this, then it will give actually some garbage, usually. So if you have some input cell, and it's completely not what you want, right? So the trick to do is to first convert it into some good format. And for this, there is a combination. You can also go to menu, like cell, convert to input form. for example. But I use Ctrl-Shift-N, and then it is copyable expression, copyable. Let's see. Okay, after that, it's quite straightforward. I just have to program this. So N is equal to 5, say. And, oops, where am I? That's done. So that's the rule, which I can construct by copying, right? And now, also there are these constraints with these boundary conditions, which I prepared in advance and type. And now, so we just have to check, we just take some particular value of u, say u equal to 1, and put into this expression. So presumably this should be equal to 1. Now, if I apply the rule, okay, j is equal to 1, see? And so still it is not 1, because I have to apply the rule several times. Okay, and then it is 1. And now the thing to do is actually to check for all j's from 1 to n. And indeed, for all of them, it is 1. Okay, just so the main mistake people did here that they were trying to use recursion in J, and then it's somehow more complicated, the result. But if you do recursion in U instead, then it's quite immediate. Okay, I'm almost done. Now about simplifying this expression. So quite surprisingly, full simplify can simplify this because what you expect is actually that all this 3pi will just change you the sign, right? So for you, of course, this expression looks much simpler, and for me as well, than this one. But for Mathematica, somehow it does not. And so it's quite easy to see why. Because somehow Mathematica counts complication in some strange way. And in particular, so you can byte count. To byte count is, roughly speaking, how much this expression will take if you put it on your hard disk. Okay? And this takes you that many bytes, whereas bytes, so byte count. This one is a bit more, okay? So why is it? It's because actually there is this minus sign and it costs something. Huh? Yeah, so, yeah, this minus sign is actually supposed. And let's see, indeed, that if you just change the sign of one of them, then immediately it simplifies. Okay, so it's quite stupid behavior of Mathematica. And but imagine you have, like, billions of these terms and you want to simplify them. Then, of course, you can change sign in each of them and then change the signs back, okay, just in order to simplify. What actually works sometimes, so just a prescription, is to do trick to exp and then full simplify. Then it works again. Okay? So let me not explain you why, because I doubt anyone will explain you this. But this works, and this is a nice trick, actually. Another thing, there was suggested to change the way Mathematica counts the complication. So you can play with this, but this could actually slow down the simplification, because if it is some involved function which counts the complication of expression, it should measure the complication each time. And then if it's very slow, then it's, the result will be very slow. Okay, then I just have two more. This root killer, so I think no one did, so this is just the result. Let me show you. And that's what it produces. Do I have some time to... if I have time. Yeah. Okay, so The strategy, let me close it so that you can see. The strategy is the following. So first, we want to take numerator and denominator. So the strategy is that we want to get rid of square roots in denominator. So if we have some a plus square root in denominator, the way to get rid of it is to write a minus square root, a plus square root, times a minus square root. Right? Then you can see that in denominator, the square root disappears for the operation. So also mathematics somehow doesn't think that having all square roots in numerator looks nicer than just having all of them compressed in some square Weiss expression. So what we do, we have to take denominator and replace all the signs in the square roots. So minus square root I. Sorry. Okay, and then this thing should be multiplied by denominator. And so then the fastest thing to do is collect with respect to square roots and simplify. Okay? And then we should do the same with numerator. And then just divide one by another. Huh? So let's try power expand. Doesn't work. Some other, so full simplify. Doesn't work. So nothing works actually. And you have to program this elementary function each time, because it's super useful. Okay. Then you can combine it into one single function and then put into some your favorite package and use it forever. And here I use this block construction just to avoid some intermediate variables to be stored in Mathematica. Okay. How much do I have? Like 3 minutes? So now about these functions with memory. So I can, let's just compare some function without memory. So I define some recursive function with some initial data, and then when I evaluated f of 3, I get 3. So if I then it takes forever, and then Mathematica complains, right? So the thing to avoid this is to use memory, because you see at each time I evaluate f at 100, it should go back to 99 and 98 and compute it again. So it is some huge tree which grows each time I call for this function, right? And imagine I just memorized once, and then this tree, the complication is not quadratic, it is linear after that. Okay. And the way to memorize is actually to say Mathematica each time when you evaluate the expression, to go to the right-hand side, and the right-hand side you should dynamically generate definition. Okay? So this, when I just say f of 1 is equal to 1, I generate some definition. So let's see. So if I put question mark f, then there are all the definitions associated with f. So f of 1 is 1, f of 2 is 2, and f of n is this. And now I tell Mathematica actually to continue this procedure each time I call this function. So if I call f of 3, then it will go to the right-hand side, for n equals 3, and we'll memorize that f of 3 is equal to f of 2 minus plus f of 1. So to see it, we do question mark f, and we see that this definition is stored now. Now we can really efficiently go to, I don't know, very huge numbers and do plots. So it takes really milliseconds, and if you try to do it with without memory, it will take forever. Okay, and finally, probably the most important exercise is to go. Oops, I don't have internet, so it doesn't work. But if you go to this page, there is a form to fill for the dinner, where you can select between simple chicken or something more sophisticated. Okay, thank you.